Welcome to Talk Central, the business technology podcast brought to you by the editors at techcentral.co.za. My name is Duncan McLeod. I'm here with Craig Wilson. Hi, Craig.
Hi, Duncan.
So we missed last week's show, unfortunately, but it was so hectic, we just didn't get around to it.
Indeed, which is a pretty good excuse, if you ask me.
Absolutely. But finally, a quietish day. We're recording this on a Tuesday afternoon for a change.
Which is a little bit unusual, but...
Why not? It's we thought spring was back last week, but it's freezing again now.
Yeah, we were just being teased.
But, yeah.
But there's lots to cover, as we've had a bit of a gap. There's quite a lot to talk about.
Yeah, and I think most notable is the very surprising and spectacular news that came out of the US yesterday about Google buying Motorola Mobility for $12.5 billion in cash.
Sure, as some people have put it, Google buying Motorola's patents for $12.5 billion in cash.
Yes, that's really what this deal is about, isn't it?
Right, yeah, exactly. I mean, that's, you know, a lot of people have said that hopefully it will provide some insulation in the ongoing patent war, a war that, of course, some people argue Google didn't really want to get involved in the first place. It's not sort of in keeping with their ethos, and they certainly aren't known for wanting to fight unnecessarily, but unfortunately they have had to respond considering how many people are trying to drag them over the proverbial coals.
Yeah, I remember a couple of weeks ago, David Drummond, the head of the legal head at Google, wrote a blog post which got a lot of people talking, saying that accusing Microsoft, I think in particular, of wielding patents
and as he put it, bogus patents.
Yes. So now Google is, I mean, we can now see what sort of a threat Apple and Microsoft wielding these patents, and other companies wielding these patents, is actually to them, that they're prepared to stump up $12.5 billion to buy Motorola Mobility, ostensibly for those patents.
Sure.
To protect them.
And as with the argument about some other sort of purchases we've seen in the IT space lately, the argument too is also that perhaps they bought it so that other people couldn't, you know, in much the same way that Microsoft snapped up Skype.
Yes. But, there are a lot of ramifications to this deal, potential ramifications. I think one of the most interesting ones is, and Craig, you had a look at that, is what this could mean for other Android third-party handset manufacturers like Samsung and HTC, etc. And I wonder if this is going to make... I know they put out statements in support of the deal, but I wonder if this is going to make them consider Windows Phone 7 from Microsoft a little more carefully, especially given that Microsoft is now the only major operating system manufacturer for mobile devices and tablets that isn't aligned to a hardware manufacturer.
Writing up the story on it, I was speaking to Carolina Milanesi, who's an analyst at Gartner, and she was saying that it's not surprising that the other manufacturers have come out saying that they are in favor of the deal, so the other manufacturers who use Android, but that the similarity between their praise of the deal suggests that it's just the PC thing to say. They're really just towing the line, particularly the likes of Samsung, who've so heavily invested in Android that they can't really afford to make a major break from it now. But I think what's going to be really interesting too is how Motorola's devices will change. You know, Milanesi suggested that they could become the benchmark for Android devices. And the other question is whether these will then have, you know, will they be the most up-to-date, and will they sort of lead the field in Android devices, and will the other manufacturers be somewhat left behind? You know, Samsung already have been notorious for being slower to update, you know, provide updates to Android than other manufacturers, but whether that's Samsung's fault or the fault of Google, I'm not really sure. I think it's been interesting to see what the Motorola devices turn into. And, you know, for a long time, Motorola was written off. And in fairness, they released a slew of horrible phones, one after the other, that has kind of made them a bit of a forgotten brand. But the Zoom and the Atrix have turned that around.
Well, I played around with the Defy earlier this year, which is their sort of their tough phone, which you can...
I saw you dipping it in the swimming pool.
Swimming pool, yeah. That's a really cool device with a great screen, and you know, they've been putting out some really good products lately. So I think Motorola, to a large extent, has turned the corner. Perhaps not to the same extent as they have in the US outside the US.
Sure.
But I think in the US they're doing pretty well again.
Well, and I think that's, you know, the Zoom and the Atrix, which we'll be reviewing shortly. They've been getting good reviews in the markets that they're already out in.
Yeah.
And it's certainly an indication that Motorola's on the sort of right track with this deal. Of course, it changes things. And as was also pointed out though by some of the analysts, it's not suddenly going to turn Motorola into the handset company necessarily. You know, they certainly trail, and they're barely a blip on the radar really if you compare it to the sales of, say, Samsung and Apple's iPhones and so on.
Yeah.
But this certainly gives them a leg up, and it's put them back in the sort of, you know, in the public consciousness, and people are aware of the company again and interested in watching what they're doing. And
you're going to the Motorola Zoom and Atrix launch here in South Africa tomorrow in Johannesburg.
Indeed, yeah.
And I'm intrigued that Motorola's taken so long to bring the Zoom to the South African market. I think at one point the Zoom was seen as the most logical rival to the Apple iPad. But
even the Samsung Galaxy 10.1. Or
yeah, well, that wasn't around then.
Sure.
When the Zoom first came out, so I'm wondering why they've taken so long. I think they would have done a lot better in terms of sales if they brought the device to this market quicker than they have. And I think a lot of people who are looking for an Android tablet will probably go for the Samsung now over the Motorola Zoom, depending on how it's priced. But I think
depending if it's still suitably spec'd, because as you said, it's a few months old now. By
well, there's a new Zoom coming out, so I wonder if that's the one they're going to be launching locally.
True. Well, we'll find out tomorrow.
Yeah.
You can read about it later in the week if you're interested.
Yeah. Good. Craig, speaking of mobiles, you went to Nokia Function a couple of days ago. I think it was last week already now.
It was, unfortunately. It feels like a couple of days ago, yes.
And that was the launch of Nokia Maps Traffic.
Indeed, which is really interesting, Duncan, because, you know, obviously this navigation space has also been hotting up lately, and the announcement from Nokia comes pretty close after Google announced that they were now supporting Google Maps navigation for South Africa and Android users.
Yeah.
And of course, this is a related product, but this is the thing that Nokia is offering that no one else has been able to match yet, is the live traffic. And they say that the traffic info comes from a variety of sources and will be updated regularly, but it includes a number of sensors around major hotspots to sort of automatically track the traffic. I think it's a great service. It's certainly one that makes the Nokia a more attractive device again. The other thing about Nokia Maps, of course, is that well, there are other differentiating factors that have largely fallen away. The one was that you could use them in any country and they'd be free. The other was that you could download maps to your device.
Which you can do on Android now.
Yeah, and that's exactly my point, is that unfortunately all the things that used to differentiate it have now Android sort of caught up. So the one thing that remains is the traffic. But of course, we can expect to see the same coming from Google Maps shortly, I'm sure. And the other interesting thing that the Nokia announced was that they've started... they've done some sort of 3D mapping of various cities of the sort you used to see on
that's cool.
Google Earth. Mm. And the first South African city to get the treatment is Cape Town. So if you go to the desktop platform, which you can download, a web platform, you can visit maps.nokia.co.za. You have to download a small sort of plugin. But thereafter, you can go and have a look around Cape Town and see all of the major buildings in the city bowl mapped out in 3D, which is quite cool.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. Hopefully they bring that to Johannesburg soon.
I'm sure they will, yes. Mm. And I believe there's also plans to do Durban and the major cities. Mm. But Cape Town seemed a good place to start, and certainly being the prettiest makes the best sort of showcase of the technology's first outing for South Africans.
Yeah. I'm very glad I'm not in the PND, the personal navigation device business, because these cell phone operators, they're just trying to outcompete each other with these free services on their devices. So you've got free navigation, you've got free maps, you've got free turn-by-turn navigation. On these large screen smartphones, I really actually can't see the point really anymore of buying a separate PND.
Absolutely. I mean, unfortunately, and for all the good work they've done, I can't see the point at all, particularly as with, you know, the major manufacturers like TomTom and Garmin and so on, when there are updates to maps, you have to, you know, wait for the whole map sort of series to be updated.
Mm.
Whereas with things like Google Maps navigation, updates happen without you even knowing it. Mm. And it's just a lot more convenient. And as you said, you know, with the size of screens, there are some smartphones that are actually even larger than the very budget model standalone GPS devices.
Yeah.
And I have a mother who desperately wants a GPS, and I've just decided that the next phone I'll get her will be an Android one, and that'll solve the problem.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So if I were in that space, I'd be very concerned.
It's not even a case of relying on online maps anymore as you drive around and consuming lots of data, because you can just simply download the maps for the areas that you visit regularly. Nokia, you can download any city in the world where they've got their mapping data available, and
absolutely.
I see Android allows you to pre-cache data in areas that you expect to travel regularly, so you can do that at home or at the office over Wi-Fi.
And not have to do it on roaming.
And then you're not going to have to, well, not roaming, you're not going to have to use any cellular data.
Sure, absolutely. And if you are roaming, you won't have to use cellular data for that if you've pre-cached it at the hotel or at home. Yeah, I mean, I think it must be very worrying for the people who actually make standalone devices. And they're going to have to find, perhaps also, I imagine we're going to see a lot more deals between companies with people integrating GPS into other electronic devices that perhaps previously didn't support it.
Mm.
Of course, that too could become redundant fairly quickly as soon as one of the phone manufacturers makes it possible to add geotagging information to other devices via it over, say, Bluetooth.
Right, so Craig, Cell C reported its annual financial results last week. A little belated, I guess, for the year to December 31st, 2010. They showed a 12% increase in customers to 8.2 million. It must be emphasized that they measure customers as anyone who is active in the network in a four-month period.
Right.
Unlike Vodacom, which I know is a three-month period, and I suspect MTN is also a three-month period. So the numbers will be slightly inflated because of the fact that Cell C uses a four-month window for active SIM cards. But 8.2 million, so they are showing some growth. Their EBITDA, or effectively their operating profit, remained flat at 1.4 billion rand. They say that that hasn't increased because of the investment they're making in both their network and in their in marketing and advertising around their broadband products, etc. So, and they're still not making a net profit. Although when I asked Simon Duffy, who's the acting CEO following the recent departure of Lars Reichelt, whether they're making a net profit, he said that they are not, but they expect to soon. He wasn't going to unpack what he meant by soon.
Sure, that's also very diplomatic.
But they do seem to be on track to turning a profit, which would be quite a milestone for the company, because they've never turned a true bottom line profit.
Sure. Well, and also, I mean, as you were saying, looking at the figures of the growth in terms of customer numbers, even allowing for some errors, even if you say lop 2% off the figure, you know, a 10% increase in customers is not to be sneezed at. And
especially in a maturing market like this.
Sure, and especially in one where you've got two fairly dominant players.
I think the more important line for Cell C was that they've grown their ARPU, or average revenue per user, to 99 Rand a month. It's still below their rivals, MTN and Vodacom, but it is an important improvement and does...
And it's an important measure, that, yeah.
Yeah, it does reflect that perhaps Cell C is being somewhat successful in attracting the higher LSM segments, which is their stated intention.
Sure. They also mentioned, didn't they, that the current broadband specials are going to be coming to an end, which makes us wonder what they're going to offer next. Because they were the first to offer sort of the most competitive data prices almost a year ago now, I think it is.
Yeah, it's been almost exactly a year since they launched their network in Port Elizabeth and introduced these broadband special prices.
But of course, those prices don't look quite so special anymore if you consider the events of recent months, and obviously particularly Ata's package.
Ata's special package, yeah, which must be emphasized, is only available on a 24-month contract.
And only available on their particular...
on their network.
Their network, not where they're piggybacking on MTNs.
Yeah. But the market is getting competitive, and Cell C certainly kick-started this price war 12 months ago. So you can be sure they're not going to come to market with something that's more expensive than what's out there already.
No, certainly, but they certainly couldn't afford to.
No. So it'll be interesting to see what they decide there.
The Vox Superphone and your ADSL line go together like taxis and rush hour.
Ah!
But we do give a hoot. Now you can use your ADSL for more than just surfing. With the Superphone, you can call any phone, anywhere, using your ADSL line. You save money, earn rebates, and box-to-box calls are free. No contracts, just plug and play. Your ADSL and the Vox Superphone. It's the perfect combination. Make the most of your ADSL. Visit voxsuperphone.co.za.
After the advent of the telephone, it took mankind 70 years to invent the color television. And yet, it only took the next 23 years to invent lasers, the internet, to put a man on the moon.
Ignition sequence start.
It begs the question, what will the business world be like in the next 23 years? Wherever your business is at, Telkom Business will be there with you. Telkom Business.
Virtual Access, ECN's latest cost-saving telecom service. Virtual Access is a single 0860 number, providing your customers with national access to your company, no matter how many branches you have or where your customers are calling from. If you are currently using or plan to use an 0860 number, you need to talk to ECN. Virtual Access is the best price single national number offering in the market. For more, visit ecntelecoms.com. ECN, lowering the cost of doing business.
So I had an interesting interview, must have been about a week and a half ago now, with the CEO of Neotel, and Sunil Joshi, and we were chatting about their focus or their plans in the consumer market. And well, compared to 8.2 million customers on Cell C and 20 something million on Vodacom and however many tens of millions it is on MTN, they're struggling a bit. 60,000 customers. They've added 10,000 retail consumer customers in the last quarter, but they're still small. But they say they're committed to continuing to focus on that space. And what they term densifying their coverage, but I think their consumer retail space they've been a little disappointing, to be honest.
Sure, I mean the problem too is I'd be interested to know how many customers they've enjoyed sort of at the peak and how many they enjoy now. Mm. I know a lot of people who certainly tried Neotel. You know, there was an awful lot of excitement when they first came to market. And I know a lot of people who did give their product, their consumer product, a try, only to have to revert to Telkom because the service was so poor. I mean, I actually tried Neotel in my own house. And after getting them out to put a booster aerial on the roof and all manner of things, we just eventually gave it up just because the service was poor.
Mm. Was that in Rosebank? That was in
Rosebank, right near the mall, right by the sort of business area of Rosebank.
Yeah.
Where the coverage really should have been good.
Yeah.
Although, curiously, they actually told us that the buildings around Rosebank, the mall and the zone, they said may have been impeding the signal, which, of course, complicates things and doesn't really make that much sense.
Tower on the other side of the mall from where you live.
Yes, exactly. We really wanted to support them, and we were really excited at the prospect of not having to go with Telkom, but the product simply wasn't up to it. So it was nice to hear that they're looking to improve that, and obviously they'll need to win more customers in the long term.
Yeah, definitely.
But you say they announced some new products, or just
they're promising to launch new broadband products or data products later in August. So we should see those in the next 2 weeks.
Right.
But in the space where fixed line, certainly outside of the copper line rental, where data prices have fallen precipitously in the last 12 to 18 months. And where there's this mobile broadband price war underway, they're going to have to come up with something quite special if they want to grow that customer base of theirs significantly. I suspect most of their customers are simply using Neotel as a voice replacement for Telkom lines at the moment.
Yes, indeed, and not so heavily for data. Mm. That's the problem, is increasingly, as we said, especially as people find alternative ways to do their own sort of voice over IP and so on. Data is really the area that people need to focus on, because conceivably in 10 years' time, you won't necessarily have a voice line. It'll just be data and everything will be carried over it.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, Neotel's voice rates are very good compared to if you put them up against Telkom's. You look at their calls to mobile and their calls to fixed line. They offer free on-net calls over weekends, all that sort of thing.
Sure, there's some very competitive rates, And the problem is just making the service not only compelling, or the product offerings compelling, but making them, they need to be consistent and they need to be perceived as reliable. And I think that's been one of the problems too.
Yeah. Given their financial resources, I think they have kind of resigned themselves to being a niche player in the consumer market, but they have certainly said that they're not going to exit it, which is good.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. As long as, remaining, I also wouldn't want to see them disappear entirely because any competition is good competition.
If I was looking for a home voice service and I was within a good Neotel coverage area, I'd probably seriously consider them over getting a Telkom line. But the fact is, a lot of people subscribe to Telkom now for broadband, not for voice.
Sure, absolutely.
So another interesting conversation, and this was a story of yours, Craig, was that Nokia is looking at, or is keen for the South African operators to introduce fixed cost data plans, similar to the BlackBerry Internet service, which has proved hugely popular, especially in the consumer market. Do you think they're going to get this right? I know they've been lobbying the operators.
Well, in terms of popularity, not just popular with the consumer market, but especially with the youth end of it, you can see the appeal of BlackBerry's sort of fixed cost plans, particularly if you're a parent with sort of teenagers who otherwise could rack up fairly enormous bills. The appeal of these fixed cost services is huge. I think if Nokia can put together a compelling enough proposition for the operators, you know, I've heard too that the reason BlackBerry works in the way it does has something to do with their particular compression algorithms, and that supposedly it doesn't place a lot of stress on the network. And having had the misfortune of having used BlackBerry's internet services and waiting 10 minutes for a page to load, I can certainly believe that.
Were you doing that on Edge-based BlackBerry or a 3G-based BlackBerry?
I don't know. Either way, it's dismal.
It could have been Edge. Could have been Edge largely at fault. I mean, when my Android phone drops down to Edge, it becomes almost unusable.
Like treacle, yeah. Well, that's been the problem. I mean, I must admit, I don't have a BlackBerry device myself, but my girlfriend does, and I have used hers occasionally to look things up when we're out and about, and I haven't had my phone for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. And I've generally found BlackBerry internet services, even in, you know, really good coverage areas, to be pretty slow.
Yeah.
So slow, in fact, that being the kind of person I am, I'd actually rather pay for 3G data and save myself the waiting period.
Yeah.
But you can see
a lot of people aren't prepared to do that. And for 59 Rand a month or whatever these contracts cost in that region, I think as low as 49 Rand on one of the networks, it's certainly a way to manage your costs. And if I was a parent with teenagers, I'd give them a BlackBerry phone because they can manage their data communication costs much more.
Absolutely.
More
and also, if you're the sort of user who doesn't use that much data or who cares far more about the keeping the price down than the quality of the service, it's a fantastic service, and it's a great enabler potentially too. As you said, it's so cheap, and you can even get BlackBerry services on prepaid, that it's a great enabler too of bringing, even if it is slow access, bringing access to people who perhaps otherwise wouldn't have internet access at all.
Yeah, for sure.
It's a wonderful service. I hope, you know, Nokia obviously are interested. Their argument is that BlackBerry internet services provides a real sort of unfair competitive advantage in that they're the only ones who can offer it. And now that more and more phones are using more and more data, it makes sense that you should be able to get a fixed price data plan, even if it is at, say, a reduced speed or you're limited to 2G or whatever it is. You know, to have other operators or other manufacturers with those sort of options in the market. Whether the operators will go for it, I suppose it depends if the handset manufacturers like Nokia can present compelling enough models and show that it's not going to impair network stability and not going to create greater sort of traffic.
Definitely. I do wonder if the mobile operators regret doing the BIS package from BlackBerry, though. I wonder what the sort of margins are they get on that on that business.
Sure. Well, I imagine, I mean, especially when you look at the sort of business users and just the widespread popularity of BlackBerry, I imagine that in the long run, through other services too, they must have recouped even when they're knocking it down. It's getting people on the network, and people still, you know, even if they try and stick to things like BlackBerry Messenger, will occasionally send SMSs and will still be making calls and will still be generating billable, you know, sort of usage.
Lastly this week, I'm getting quite excited about some of the technologies that are coming out of Microsoft. Mango has just gone RTM or released to manufacturing, so we should see the first Mango-based phones in the market pretty soon.
And from what we've seen, those look extremely exciting.
They look very cool. I haven't had a chance to actually play with one of these devices yet, but I've watched plenty of videos online. And obviously, the Nokia is going to be announcing its Mango Windows 7 devices later this year. And I don't know, I've been using Android for 2 years now, and I think I've always been a Nokia user. I think I may go back to Nokia next year when I get my next upgrade and try out Windows Phone 7 Mango.
Sure, well, hopefully, of course, well, not hopefully, definitely you will have had a chance to play with it before then.
Definitely
be able to make a more informed decision. But I agree. I think it's incredibly exciting at the moment. You know, for so long, Microsoft was just the this evil sort of Goliath, and people just gave it a hard time.
That's Apple now.
And that's exactly what I was going to say. Yeah, exactly. Now that mantle is sort of shifting to Apple's shoulders, and it's quite funny how the tide has turned. And you know, if you look back sort of 10 years, it's quite a massive shift. Obviously, Apple's also worth far more than it was in those days, and just has a greater sort of share of people's thinking. But Microsoft really does seem to be turning things around, and I can't wait to see the new phones. And of course, there's also the excitement around Windows 8.
Yeah, that's the one I'm really looking forward to. And I was just looking today; they're expecting to ship the pre-release build of Windows 8 next month in September. So I'll probably be installing that.
Sure, and also, I mean, I think, you know, all the videos I've seen and all the sort of comments I've read online, and as I've been following the Windows 8 story, in many ways, to me at least, Windows 8 is far more exciting than, say, OS X Lion. Lion's proved to be fairly incremental update. I mean, yeah. I haven't found that it's particularly changed my experience in terms of actually using a computer. A couple of things, if anything, have annoyed me. You know, some of the shortcuts I used to like no longer work or have been changed. But Windows 8, meanwhile, seems like a complete overhaul, and it's being billed as such. And it's going to be, you know, comparatively a really major shift in on operating system and in how you interact with your computer. I think it could really make Microsoft far more attractive.
What I really like is the fact that, and I think it's the smartest thing Microsoft has done in years, is the fact that it's integrating this user experience, this user interface. I think it's called the Metro UI across all of its device platforms. So you're going to have Metro, the Metro user interface on Xbox, on smartphones, on tablets, and on PCs.
Well, is it? It's a sort of a top-down sort of all-encompassing approach, whereas one of the other problems with even with Android and iOS has been that it's, you know, but being fairly device specific. And now you look at things like, I mean, they say Lion incorporates elements that they discovered worked on things like the iPad and the iPhone, which is, you know, to my mind, the wrong way to be doing things. You know, to create a platform or an OS that works on all platforms and integrates with all of them seems the sensible way to go.
Yeah. I'm really also looking forward to the first Windows 8 based tablets.
Absolutely,
That really clean design of the Metro UI. I think it'll work fantastically well on a tablet. And Microsoft at the Mango launch here in Johannesburg, probably 2 months ago now, had a real dig at Apple, but they made a very good point. iOS is simply a collection of icons that you dip in and out of.
Absolutely, it's the widgets. It's the widget based interface that really seems to be where things are going. Yeah. And things
but it's more than a widget interface. I mean, Google's got Android has a very widgety sort of interface, but it almost everything sort of seems to flow on Windows Phone 7. You through these live tiles, for example, on the home
screen. It's more dynamic, and the way it sucks in content automatically. And refreshes, and I agree, it's a lot more sort of high end than widgets. Widgets too are similarly limited in a sense. They sometimes feel like large icons with a bit of added info. But I agree. I think the icon sort of construction of iOS devices is going to have to get an overhaul, because exactly it requires you to drill down into each individual thing you want to do. And you know, while it works and it's stable, eventually consumers are going to want a lot more, particularly when things like Windows 8 actually hit the market, and it's common practice. But then we'll have to wait and see. It's too early to tell, and of course we're interested to see what all comes in the final version of iOS 5. I know it's available for
it's in beta at the moment
for testers and developers.
When
at
is
the
that coming out? In September, next month.
They say September. I've seen lots of dates bandied about, but I won't. I guess on one until I've actually heard an announcement from Apple. Many people like to guess and start rumors around it.
Yeah, definitely. But we won't see Windows 8 until sometime next year. I think the date. I think I saw some speculation online the other day that we could be looking at an April release to manufacturing for Windows 8.
Sure, and that it should be out in beta in coming months.
Well, they're going to release a pre-release build. I'm not sure whether that's a beta or a release candidate or whatever the old terminology was.
Sure.
But presumably some sort of beta release.
And that's hopefully in September, do you say?
Next month, yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah. But perhaps we shouldn't get too excited, because Microsoft has had a reputation in the past of cocking these things up.
Sure, and of releasing software that buggy is an understatement.
Yeah.
So.
Windows Millennium Edition being the most famous example. I don't know if you ever used that operating system.
Very briefly,
it was horrible.
And as I say, Vista being a more recent
Vista was
example.
Vista was nowhere nearly as bad as Windows Millennium Edition. I bought Windows Millennium Edition, upgraded from Windows 98, ran it for about 2 weeks, reinstalled my hard drive and went back to Windows 98. I just couldn't deal with the frequent crashing.
I can believe it, yeah.
Blue screen of death every half an hour.
Well, hopefully, you know, we get the impression Microsoft is definitely taking its time with this Windows release. You know, they're certainly biding their time, and one can only hope that they've learnt from those previous errors and mistakes.
But everything, the pre-release builds aren't out there yet, but everything we're seeing and reading suggests that Windows 8 is going to be a very stable platform. It's built on Windows, obviously on the Windows 7 core,
sure.
which is a let's face it, a really stable operating system. I use it as my primary production machine on my desktop, and it very rarely crashes. My Mac crashes more than Windows 7 does.
Yeah, mine does now that I installed Lion.
And if it's built on that core and they bring all these promises, all these changes they're promising in the user interface, I think it's going to be a really cool operating system.
Yeah, and really shake things up. And that's also good to see. It's nice to know that Jobs has been kept on his toes. So.
Yeah. Good. Well, we're going to wrap it up there. We need to start doing some prep work for tomorrow's big MTN results presentation. So hopefully we leave you hanging for another two and a half weeks before we do the next podcast.
No, with any luck, we'll be back end of this week or at very worst, beginning of next.
So thanks for listening. If you've got any feedback on the show, as always, you can email info@techcentral.co.za. Just before we go, we have two copies of Kaspersky Labs' latest antivirus software to give away. It's for Windows, is it, Craig?
It is, both for Windows, yeah.
Windows version. And if you drop us a mail and tell us the name of the company that's giving away the software, we will send it to you. First two entries received will get the packages. And that's it for this week, until hopefully this Friday.
Hopefully, yeah.
From myself and Craig Wilson. Cheers.